Sometimes it can feel like food has an emotional control over you. Well, it's time to show your food who's boss with Noom. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 383. Got a special guest coming on the show tonight, a first-time guest to the show. You can find his work over at pitcherlist.com. He does the Fab articles on Sunday, the On the Wire fantasy baseball podcast that comes out to you on Saturday evenings or for your listening pleasure Sunday mornings, whichever works in your schedule. He is the reigning 2020 TGFBI champion. And you can find him on Twitter at Hastings Kevin. Kevin Hastings, how are you doing, man?
Awesome, Bubba. Thanks so much for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. Looking forward to it. First off, it's late. I know it's July now, but congratulations on TGFBI. So that's pretty cool stuff.
I appreciate it. Early in the season, in the off season, I tried to downplay it. But with the way this season is going, that's all I have to hang my hat on right now.
It's like they say, flags fly forever, man. Just fly that thing as often as you can, because I'm happy for like my finishing third in my league stuff. You won the whole darn thing, so that's pretty good stuff. How's everything else going fantasy wise this season? Are you hanging in there? Because it's been a wild ride, man.
I brought this up. I forget who I was talking to not too long ago on Twitter. It might have been Lucas Beery, who you had on recently. Mm-hmm. Either great or horrible, not much in between. So I have some nice teams. I have some that aren't good at all. And I'm not mid-pack anywhere yet, but starting to get there on some of the bad teams, at least starting to approach mid-pack, so it's getting better.
Yeah, I feel you. I kind of have a similar situation going. I look at my standings, and it's like, okay, these guys are doing like top three, and then these guys are like bottom three. It's just like, where are you going to hang out? And it's just tough to do because of all the crazy injuries and just everything else that's going on this season. It's been wild, but I keep telling myself everyone's going through it, so it's not just us. It's just luck of the draw sometimes, and it's still three more months to go. We're at the halfway point, and it could flip completely. You never know. So we might get the lucky end of the second half and go from there. Let's talk about some recent news real quick, and it's been really interesting in Baltimore. It's not a great team, but they're playing better lately. They swept the Astros, for crying out loud, in Houston, so there's hope out there still. And they've been just a rotating wave of closers and here and there, and now Cole Sulcer's there, a guy that, in 2020 was getting saves for Baltimore, kind of written off going into this season. He's gotten three straight saves. I know we don't want to spend a lot of money in Fab on closers, but is this a guy that you think's worth taking a shot on as a potential closer for Baltimore?
I think possibly, especially with the five-out one last night against the Astros. And on the season, he's been really good. 43 strikeouts and 30 and two-thirds innings really stood out to me. I hadn't realized he was doing that well. I had stayed away from the Baltimore reliever whole situation until Fry a couple weeks ago, because he was much less expensive than the previous guys had been. But Sulcer probably, this is the problem, right? We're here on Thursday afternoon, and if he gets another one over the weekend, or possibly even two, I'm not going to get him. I'll have a bid in, but I'm not going to get him.
Yep, 100% with you. Like, I've been pounding the drum over and over. It's like, I'm not I will pay for saves, but I'm not paying for saves, if that makes sense on the thing. It's like, I'll put my bids in, I keep them honest bids. That's most of my bids these days. That's all it is, because most of us have spent a lot of fab already. That's just the nature of the beast. So you're trying, thinking, you know, every now and then you see those leagues where it's like, whoa, I can win for like $3. What? So you got to put something out there and just hope. But yeah, with Sulcer, I remember rostering him last year. And it's something that you mentioned there that I kind of like, especially in this weird, wacky pitching situation we have right now, where just quality innings can be important. You know, last year the ERA wasn't great and everything. The strikeouts were down compared to this year. And this year is more like relevant to what he's done in the past when it comes to strikeouts. But what Sulcer does is he does multiple innings. And that's something that even if he's not getting you the saves, he might run into a win, or you can accumulate strikeouts for you, or he can help you in other ways besides just praying he goes out there and has a clean ninth inning, because those are far and few between these days. So I'm with you on Sulcer. I would definitely throw something out there on him. We'll see how things go as the weekend goes on. It's just some minor stuff here. At the end of Washington's barrage on Wednesday, where they have scored everything, Trey Turner, you know, hit for the cycle on his birthday. Kevin, isn't it crazy that he has three cycles already in his career? What's crazier? He's got three cycles, or the MLB record is only three?
Right. That's what blew my mind. And he's only the fourth one to do it. Yeah. That is crazy for such a young player to be in that company already.
Yeah. What if you had just had to have fun with it? Like, this is obviously not a fantasy question, but just a baseball question. He's so young still. I want to say he's like 25, something like that. I could look it up. But how many do you think he ends with?
Oh, goodness. They're so random. Yeah. But I would have to think a player with his athleticism and also having the power to go with it would have at least a couple of more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd put another 2 to 3 in there, because eventually we've seen it with so many of these kind of athletic shortstops. They get older and they put on a little bit of weight, and they kind of let it go to – they want to go more of the power because their legs just aren't what they used to be. Maybe they will stay that way for him. Who knows? But usually something happens along the way where it all changes. But I want people to keep an eye on that. Trey Turner left. He jammed his hand sliding in the ninth. Juan Soto left, aggravating his hamstring. So much fun with the Juan Soto situation.
With Soto, they decided it was a cramp.
Thank goodness.
Tonight's lineup is not out yet. I just looked as you were talking, because I keep updating that to see tonight's lineup. So we don't know yet, but they did change it to it was just a cramp.
Thank goodness, because I have a few Soto shares, and there's a few listeners of the show, and I love them. They love trolling me on Juan Soto right now. It's like every Tuesday when I have Toby on, one of the listener questions is always our same little buddy, and it's always a Juan Soto. Why is he the worst player at baseball stuff? I'm like, okay, enough. But, yeah, I need him to play. I really do. Blake Snell goes to the IL, and this is a weird one because it's kind of been vague. You know, he got scratched from his start because of an illness. Now he's on the IL because of an illness, but it's not the COVID IL. So it's a very weird situation with Blake Snell. Obviously, you're not dropping him if you haven't already. Just for your two cents, Kevin, what's your take on Blake Snell this year? Because he's a guy I didn't want to roster, but if you've rostered him, it's getting close to maybe droppable.
Yeah, especially in 12-teamers, I think. But it's interesting, you know, looking ahead at the projected starter grid. They have him making his start on July 9th, his first day eligible to come back with Stammen in there. So in 15 team leagues, I think you have to hold on and see what happens.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see on that one. Speaking of another starter situation, this one wasn't on the outline, so we can just spitball it real quick. We saw Jose Suarez come in for Dylan Bundy the other day, and he looked pretty good. And after that outing, they said they'd be interested in stretching him out, and he could go 85 pitches right now, they said, and we're interested in throwing him in the rotation. Well, that's happening now. On Thursday, they announced Dylan Bundy's going to get his start pushed back, potentially skipped this go-around. They're going to have Suarez pitch on Sunday. Now that's going to be fun because, as you know, doing a lot of fab work, if he pitches well on Sunday, that's going to be just all the goodness. So we'll have to wait and see on Suarez. This is as much a question on Suarez. The way I asked you on Snell, if you would drop him, what's your thoughts on Bundy, who's almost been even – or probably has been even worse?
I already have dropped him where I had him, and when I've been asked, that's been my recommendation.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's the only places I still have him are in draft and holds leagues, because I can't drop him. So, and let's just say I haven't.
And hopefully you don't need him.
Yeah, I have not put him in the rotation the last month or so. So that's where that one stands. Max Fried returned from the IL, went 5 innings, struck out 7, looked pretty darn good. on a Wednesday night where almost all of the pitching was horrific. So Max Fried's a guy that, you know, we've seen him be very good. He's been having issues with blisters and other injuries. Are you buying back into maybe a potentially good second half for Max Fried?
Most definitely, if he stays healthy.
Yeah.
You know, these that first start back when he came back last time, he got roughed up a little bit. But his last four starts have been really good. And coming up this week, he gets at Pittsburgh, at Miami. That's a pretty good way to go into the break. If they allow him to pitch that Sunday going into the break and don't decide to give him a little extra time off.
That's a good point. That's a good point because like, part of me thought they just let him sit out until the break, just let him get fully healthy because sometimes those blisters, they pop back so fast and you never know, but the Braves are desperate for pitchers. That's part of the problem. They really need some starting pitchers. It's two great matchups, as you said. They didn't let him go. I think he went about 85 pitches, give or take, on Wednesday. I'm imagining they'll keep it pretty similar the next couple starts and get him hopefully for a strong second half. So keep an eye on Fried. That could be a nice little boom to your team if you've been kind of holding out hope for him because it's murky out there these days. A couple of guys to keep an eye on. Chris Bryant is still sitting out this week. Anthony Rizzo, he says he'd like to come back this weekend. Says. Colton Wong's been out. With some of these players, obviously there'll be more news coming out maybe later Thursday or Friday before lock, Kevin. But what's your level of confidence putting them in, like, say, an NFBC league where you get this, the second half of the week lineup situations with these three?
Yeah, like you said, we'll have a little more info. I haven't seen any news in a day or two, any new news on Chris Bryant. So that's kind of concerning, just that, you know, they're off today. We're probably not going to know anything till lineup's out tomorrow. Rizzo, lingering back issues, always a worry. Like you said he hopes to be back this weekend. Huge question mark for me as well, both of the Cubs players. Colton Wong's hopeful to play tonight. I don't think the lineup's out quite yet. It wasn't when I looked last. But I would think if he's hopeful to play tonight, he would at least be back for the weekend.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what Milwaukee does because they're playing some great baseball right now. And Colton Wong has been very, very good for them. But you have Luis Urias, who's smoking everything. You have Willy Adames, who's smoking everything. Yeah. And then Keston here is kind of showing signs of life. It's like someone's going to be the odd man out. It'll be interesting. It could be, you know, Urias has been playing third for the most part. Maybe what, Sogard. Is Sogard the one playing? They have somebody out there. Maybe he'll get the short end of the straw. But the Brewers are starting to slowly put it together, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, it's nice that they – I think I read Colton Wong might have been available last night, but when you're putting up 15 runs and you want a guy to get rest, it's nice.
Yeah, no need to put him out there, that's for sure. That's a luxury to have it. At one point, down 7-0, going to the bottom of the first, and they just come back and just pummel the Chicago Cubs. So that was quite entertaining for sure. Before we get into some big June months to see if they continue going forward, I know a guy that you're quite interested in, and I love prospects. I used to be way more into them deep digging in myself, but now I trust people that know what they're doing to do it for me. And you're going to talk to us a little bit about Jarren Duran, who is an absolute stud for the Red Sox, for those that don't know, which you probably do if you listen to the show. He's been beasting out in the minor leagues. He even played for the Olympic Club as they tried to qualify. And we're just kind of waiting for that call. So what do you have on Jarren Duran that's been piquing your interest?
Well, yeah, it's just fascinating to me. Like you, I trust other people for most of my news, but he's just having a monster season, and it's very intriguing to me what happens. They could use a leadoff hitter, the Red Sox, and it'd be nice to know, is he going to struggle like Kelnick did? Is he going to struggle like Franco has? They both came out of the gate, had a great first game or two, and then fell off, started struggling. It'd be nice to know that rather than bring him up in September when you're in the stretch run and then hoping to use him in the postseason. So I really think that, you know, asking him not to play for Team USA would be a PR, maybe not nightmare, maybe that's too strong a word, but they'd get some pushback. So I really think that he plays this out, but we see him in August. They can always manipulate his time at the beginning of next year if they'd like to. So I think he's one of these guys, you know, with the break coming up and only a couple of weeks left prior to the Olympics, once MLB gets started back up, in FBC, if he wasn't drafted, you can't pick him up yet. But in leagues where he's available, I think if you have a spot, it's time, because we might see him first half of August rather than September 1st.
No, I'm with you. It's one of those, if they tried to tell him, no, you can't play in the Olympics, it's like, okay, then call me up. Like, exactly. And there you go. If you think you want to keep me healthy because you really want to use me, then use me. That's the way I would see it. So it'll be fun to see him in the Olympics. There's an interesting roster there. I think he even made the future squad for the All-Star game. Can't remember. There's a lot of great names there. Like, that's going to be fun to watch on Sunday, coming up in a week from Sunday. So that'll be good. But yeah, Durant is just mashing everything. It's like every time you turn on Twitter in the evening, it feels like someone's, there's so many Boston Red Sox Twitter accounts that it feels like someone's retweeting a Jaren Duran home run or something else going on, which is great. But yeah, I'm a big fan to see what he's got coming up. Just for fun, you could say no. Are there any other prospects besides, like, maybe Bobby Witt, as you wearing your Royals jersey there, that you're intrigued to see pretty soon?
I think for most teams, we're at the point where the Super 2 deadline is obviously passed, so we're probably waiting until September. Unless there are guys that are in contention, then they can really help. So I'm falling back on my hopes for Bobby Witt, you know, in by the end of June. Obviously didn't happen. We're a day past that now. But Duran is probably the one guy that really sticks out to me. And then we'll start to see, this is what fascinates me about prospects. We'll start to see a pitcher or two that we weren't on our radar, right? Especially with all the injuries this season, the innings limits that we're going to see due to shortened last season. It's the pitchers seem to come out of nowhere. It's not always the guy that we are counting on being the next pitcher up. It's somebody else that's performing well now. And like you brought up earlier, this is when we have to count on those that are really keeping an eye on that for us.
Yeah, definitely. It's a wild time. It's fun to actually have a minor leagues to talk about again after last year's debacle. So we get to at least see some stuff and get some feel for how these guys are doing. But it's been weird because you mentioned Kalinic, you mentioned Franco, and there's many, many more between pitchers and hitters. Like, they come up tearing up the minor leagues, and it's a culture shock, a reality shock when they get up to the bigs, where it seems like we'd see it from time to time, but not to this extent in years past. Like, it's like every one of them pretty much has a really large growing curve. So
I was just going to ask you, does it seem like they've all struggled this year compared to past, where at least a handful would just come right out of the gate?
Yeah, it does. Like, you look at even Akil Baddoo, he struggled a ton, but he's starting to figure it out. It looks like maybe he changed his approach at the plate, because now he's walking a lot more and he's hitting for average, but the power is not there right now. You look at Logan Gilbert. He's a great example. He looked really rough early on. He's starting to get it going, and I don't see him leaving anytime soon. Like, he's looking closer and closer to be like a legit pitcher. I guess it's a combination of, can the kid get it figured out between his ears, or does he need to go back down and get his confidence back? Like, where's that level? And I guess how much patience does the team have? Like, the Mariners didn't have anything to lose with Gilbert at that point, but a guy like Kalinic, and they have so many other options, they can send him down and tell him to go get it figured out again, which he obviously has, for those keeping track. So we'll see. I think there is something to be said with a guy like Kalinic and some of these other ones. Once they go back down, when they come back up, I feel a lot more confident in the situation. So
we'll see. Yeah, and that's another thing about Duran. He's a college guy. He's 25 years old, and yeah, I think that has something to do with maybe he'll be able to handle it a little quicker.
Oh, that's a great point. That's why you look at some of these organizations where, especially with their early picks that they expect to help sooner than later, they go college heavy, because you want that guy to come up right now and help you. Whereas, you know, you get the high school kid, you draft an 18-year-old, by the time they're up in 22 or 23, that's a whole different ball player. They're still growing, they're still maturing, they're doing all kinds of things. Like, what you thought you once drafted may not be what you once drafted. So that's always the risk you take in that scenario. So it'll be interesting to see, that's for sure. And I'm hoping we get to see Duran and these other guys come up pretty soon, especially for these teams that are kind of already throwing in the towel, roughly. We'll get that one kind of ironed out pretty quickly. All right, let's talk about some players that had some big Junes, and what do we think going forward? Obviously, we can still say they're going to be very good, but there's obviously some regression coming. Some of these guys are just playing so far out of their shoes. Like, I want to trade them immediately because this is not going to stand. There's so many angles to be taken with this, but it's always fun because, you know, it's the next cool thing. So I'm going to start off with some some easy ones. And we're going to start with Shohei Ohtani, who has just been ridiculous. Just hitting everything under the sun right now. The month of June was there's only a couple players that you could maybe say was better, but just from like just a hitting approach alone, he hit 309 with 13 home runs in the month of June, 4 stolen bases to tack onto that, and he's walking almost 17% of the time. Let's not forget he pitches like an ace. So Shohei Ohtani, I doubt you're trading him. Maybe you are. But obviously some regression. You can't hit 13 home runs every month. But what's your thoughts on Ohtani going forward?
I agree. No, I don't think you are trading him. I wouldn't. I'd have to be overwhelmed, put it that way. I looking at the rest of season projections, you know, the bat and bat X have him for, you know, 22, 23 more home runs and another 9 or 10 stolen bases. That makes him a 50-20 guy with a .280 batting average for the season. Almost duplicating what he's done so far, right? Just under it. So you would have to be overwhelmed to accept a trade for Ohtani right now.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. It's like there's always the concern with Ohtani because he's doing two things is can he get hurt? That's always the concern. Like it's the old joke, he's twice as likely to get hurt now because he's doing two different things. But I guess you could say everyone's likely to get hurt. You never know how that really plays out. I'm hoping a 50-20 season where he goes out there and throws like 100 more strikeouts would be amazing, like something we never thought we'd probably ever see in our lifetime. So that'd be great. Yeah, it's just I only wanted to bring him up because I saw some discussion on Twitter. It's like, oh, there's going to be so much regression. He's going to come to here. And blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I get it. You can't be this good, but the dude's going to still be very good, and you're not going to not play him every day you have him in your lineup. So let's just tone it down just a scotch.
And he's must-watch TV. So fun to watch, whether he's pitching or hitting or doing both. It's so fun to watch an Angels game.
It's so fun to watch. Like, how often do you get to see a pitcher still hitting leadoff, or now he's leadoff, it was cleanup or whatever. Like, and then he hits bombs. He's always having fun out there, smiling. Even when they go and check him for a substance, he's sitting there laughing with the umpires. Yes. And it's like, he just likes playing baseball. Like, he doesn't care. It's good to see. It's one of the kind of like positive notes on a weird baseball season. So yeah, I'm with you. He's must see TV. I know I don't have the package anymore because I changed providers. Long story, but like their game against the Yankees was on TV the other night on MLB Network, and I made a point like I'm having it on TV. I'm watching that because it's like Shohei and the Bronx. Like, let's go. Like that's what it's all about. Type
and
stuff,
then. So. And then he just hit that violent line drive right into the short porch. It was great. Man.
He's just so good. So good. It's amazing. Another guy that's been very, very good is Kyle Schwarber. I made the tongue-in-cheek joke. I made this comment, actually, before the season started when the Cubs released Kyle Schwarber to sign Jock Peterson to essentially the same contract the Nationals signed Kyle Schwarber to. And then you look at their career numbers, and it's like the Spider-Man gif of them pointing at each other. So very, very similar players, except this year Kyle Schwarber's playing much better. In the month of June, he's hitting .280 while walking 11% of the time and 16 home runs. Obviously, most of that's come like in the last 2 weeks, it feels like. But the dude is unconscious right now. He's not going to be this good again. But you kind of know what you're getting with Kyle Schwarber. And there could be some massive batting average regression. That is true. Would this be a guy maybe you could think about trading while he's high, or you just run it out there going, hey, he's going to lead off in an offense that has Soto and Turner behind him?
Yeah, it's you could say this about any question like this, but it's really league dependent, depending on what other people in your league think of him. Everybody may be thinking exactly what you just said, in which case I'm not taking less for him than I think he's worth, and I'm going to hang on to him and ride this out. I don't think he's going to be bad. You know, he's settling in with the new team and getting comfortable. You're right. He's not going to hit 16 home runs a month. He's probably not going to hit .280, but I think he's very comfortable where he is right now, and going clear back to the 2016 World Series, you know, this, he was a hitter when he came up, right? On base guy. And so, he has the potential to hit for a decent average, probably not .280, but I think in most cases I'm riding this out.
No, I'm with you. And the biggest thing is you didn't draft Kyle Schwarber for batting average. That was not the reason you drafted him to begin with. So if he goes and hits 220 to 230, like projections have him hitting 230 to 240 the rest of the season, that's what you drafted. You knew that when you drafted Kyle Schwarber. Yeah. But you're going to get maybe 20 more home runs this year. And that's pretty darn good, the way I look at things. And again, if he leads off, he's got decent OBP skills. That's why he led off with the Cubs before. And you got Turner, you got Soto, you got weapons behind you that could. Josh Bell's even starting to hit a little bit. Like I think it's going to be a fun summer in Washington if they can just stay healthy, because that offense is just off to a slow start. So I wouldn't get rid of him personally. I could see the argument that, hey, if someone likes him as much as maybe you do or something, yeah, you could probably get a good haul back. Like, say you need a starting pitcher, like, or something, whatever. You could sell him high. I totally get this one. But it's got to be good. I wouldn't be selling him for a discount. That's for darn sure. All right. This next guy has always been near and dear to my heart, and that is Tommy Pham. And thankfully, the Knives are not near and dear to his heart this offseason, because he's finally feeling healthy. And I always catch flack for it every preseason. It's like, he's too old. He doesn't do anything. I'm like, no, he doesn't. He's not flashy, but he gets you 20-20 plus every season. That's what Tommy Pham does. And he's starting to do it because he looks healthy all of a sudden. And he's leading off pretty much every game in the month of June. And he's hitting .341 with 6 home runs and 6 stolen bases. I call that to be pretty good. Is he over his skis? Potentially. But what's your thoughts on Tommy Pham going forward?
No, and I also love the 22 runs scored, because he is leading off for that lineup. That's awesome. Runs can be hard to come by at times. And Tommy Pham, as you said, healthy now. We know he plays with a chip on his shoulder. This is, 25-25 pace the rest of the season is what I would expect. So that's not 6 home runs and 6 stolen bases each month, but it's probably a little more, because like you said, there was a lot of, pushback in draft season. So not everybody was expecting the 25-25 that I did and you did. So if we get that the rest of the season, he's going to score another 50 runs as well. So I'm in.
And that's a great point you make about the run scored. It's not talked about nearly enough in our world, but it's one of the 5 offensive categories. That's what we play for all the time. And it's a very valid point, because a guy like Pham leading off in this ridiculous offense with Tatis, who's just ungodly, as we know. Machado, he's been very streaky, but I still think he's going to be strong, obviously. Cronenworth's a beast. Like, you guys go down the list. Myers, like, there's so much offense in this lineup. It's ridiculous. And as long as he's sitting up top there, he's got 50-plus run upside, like you said. Like, his final stat line this year could be hitting, 260-ish with, let's say, 22 home runs, 25 stolen bases, like 110 runs scored. No one will be shocked. Like, it's ridiculous what he's doing. And the big piece of that also is because he walks a ton. He's always had at least a 10-plus percent walk rate in his career. He's walking almost 15.5% of the time right now on the season. Like, he does everything you want from a leadoff hitter, and he's got some pop. So it's a really good combination with him, and he's healthy. That's the biggest bugaboo, and like I would at least listen to that argument in the preseason. He's like, well, he gets hurt a lot. I'm like, yeah, he does. But you got to – like, I think so many people have that 60-game mindset – that, like, we need the production, we can't get hurt. You got to remember, 162, there aren't many players that don't get hurt at some point in time. Most players don't play every game. Like, if you can get 140 plus from every guy, to me, that's good. Some might think I'm crazy, but I think that's, like, realistic in this world of baseball. It's not like the baseball we grew up on, that everybody plays every day and it's a pride thing. And, like, that's just the way it doesn't happen anymore. Guys, it's not the NBA where it's rest days all the time. It's not that. It feels like it's getting there with some players, but it's not that yet. But, if you give me 140 to 145 solid games, I'm happy. And Tommy Pham, like you said, with that chip on his shoulder, he'll make however many games he plays count. And I think that's very, very important. Absolutely. All right. Let's get to one that I'm so glad is finally waking up. Came in just in time for the podcast. Is Mr. Joseph Gallo. He gets to be called Joseph today because he is hitting everything, so he gets some seniority on this one. He went deep again on Thursday, but that's July 1st, so that doesn't count. But the dude, that would have made 5 straight days with home runs and given him 7 home runs in the last 5 days. But he ended June on a bang. He's hitting .263, which is outstanding for Joey Gallo. 10 home runs. He's notched 3 stolen bases in that mess. And he's still walking 23.2% of the time. Those are all great stats, Kevin, but the fact he's only striking out like 25%, I think, needs to be talked about a little too. Like, he's doing just a lot of great stuff in June. And I don't know. I've always been a Gallo fan. I understand the bugaboos. What's your take on Gallo?
Well, I got to see him in person Sunday, and unfortunately one of those five straight days with a home run was against my Royals when I was at the game in Arlington, and he just looks amazing right now. And we've seen this before, too, when he got pretty comfortable the first half of 2019 and hit for a decent average as well. And it just seems like he's warming up, kind of like Schwarber. He's comfortable right now, and he can go through these periods of when he's striking out less, that even if he maintains it under 30, you know, we're not looking at the 210 Gallo. We're looking at least 240 to 250, which is an added bonus, as well as you mentioned those stolen bases. He's got six on the year.
Yeah, that's impressive. And like you're saying, if he just keeps the strikeout rate somewhat down, that just means more balls in play. And at the rate he hits baseballs, of course they're going to leave the ballpark. Like when you have a 20%+ barrel rate and a hard hit rate through the moon, like it's just he's going to do damage to things. And he could be a guy, and I apologize to where I heard this from. I totally forget who it was. They made a great point that some of these struggling power bats early on could really take off without the sticky stuff. Because now you're not seeing ungodly breaking balls. Like, you're seeing stuff flatten out. I know it sounds like common sense stuff, but when you sit back and think about it, like, look at the correlations on things. All of a sudden, Joey Gallo's going nuts. Schwarber's going nuts. All these guys that, you know, even this guy's not a power guy, but I looked at him again this morning for a DFS article. Steven Duggar was striking out, like, 40% of the time all season. Just in, like, the last 2 weeks, he's striking out 26% of the time. That's a massive drop-off. Like, those little changes for any player – can be like, we all look at like the power numbers changing. Just go look at like contact rates. Go look at, you know, are they putting the ball in play more? Because that can lead to a strong 3 month stretch where you might get them for cheaper, stuff along those lines. So just a whole separate little rant there. But I think it'll benefit guys like Joey Gallo. And I think it's like easy to look at that, but it could be fun to watch as well.
And the other thing with Gallo, Schwarber, you mentioned, Keston Hira, you mentioned earlier. You know, these guys have been having trouble with the high fastball, which the sticky stuff also helps with that, the high four-seamer. So that's another great you make a great point.
Yeah, because like, and people don't think about the fastball, so that's true, because you'll think about that sticky stuff was giving the rise to it, like that little extra movement. So when you think you're swinging at your letters and now it's up at your chin, it's like, well, try adjusting to that at 99 miles an hour. Good luck. Like, you're not. So I don't blame them for striking out. So, yeah, it's going to be real fun to see where this all changes. I know Jason Collette tweeted it out on Wednesday that since the restrictions were starting to get put in play on the pitchers, like actually the batting average is down around baseball and the runs per game are down, like small amounts, not a lot. But it wasn't like ballooning as some would have expected. So it'll be interesting to see where it all pans out. Now, this is a guy that I think – we might have some fun discussion about on potentially trading or whatnot. But Jonathan Scope, he's always been a guy we talk about in draft season, just not appreciated. He's going to start every day. He's got pop. Usually doesn't hit for average, sitting 340 in June. He's only striking out 15.5% of the time, which is really good for Jonathan Scope. But 10 home runs in the month of June. He had 18 total extra base hits. He's hit great. No sugarcoating that at all. Good chance he gets traded. What do you think about him going forward this year, and would he be a guy you'd be looking to deal?
I would. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how we look at it, I only have him rostered in my draft and hold leagues, but in multiple, and he's been awesome for that format. Wasn't even in my starting lineup to begin the year, but was very quickly and has been just automatic in the lineup every week since, and so I hope he doesn't get traded, but you're right. It's likely that he will, and he might become a utility guy. So, yeah, if I can trade him and get a decent return, I'm probably going to, because I'm worried about the loss of playing time if he's traded.
Yeah, I would just try to sell him high. Like, I still think he has a strong season. I've always thought this, but similar to like my thoughts with Schwarber, think about the person you drafted. More often than not, they're going to find the back of their baseball card. Now, he has outperformed his baseball card for a month. Thus, the simple conversation of regression comes into play. But you just have to look at the whole picture here. Like, you know, projection sites still have him getting, you know, 13, 15 home runs. Great. hitting 250, so that average is going to drop a little bit. Not a ton, though. They actually have him kind of playing similar to the way he played the first half, so the projections actually like him, which kind of surprises me, thinking about how well he played in June. But that was a really hot June. Go back and look at April and May, and then start seeing he's going to be very streaky. So if you can trade him while he's at his peak, I think that's definitely something to look at. You could probably get like a SP3 or something that could really help you going forward if that's what you're looking for. So I'd look to do that, and the points you made is Detroit's going to try to trade everybody with a pulse that's like not under their rookie deal still. So I wouldn't be shocked if he's gone very soon.
Or owed $90 million like Miggy.
Yeah, Miggy. Man, at least he's starting to hit, so that's interesting. Yeah. But yeah, he's owed a fortune. So since like the Albert Pujols of the American League. Let's go to the Baltimore Orioles. I could have written down like six different Orioles because they all had just monster months of June. Cedric Mullins, but you know, Justin Mason talks about him enough, so we don't need to talk about that. And he's just very, very good. But Ryan Mountcastle is a guy I want to talk about because, you know, going into draft season, he was a tough one to kind of gauge. You didn't really know, like, you know, the power's there. You're kind of concerned about batting average. Would he play enough? Lots of questions. Obviously, you know, the old baseball HQ adage, draft skills over role. Like, if they're that good, they're going to find a role. And it's very true. It's tough to do. It's tough to get that mindset when you're in the middle of a draft, but it's very true. So you got Ryan Mountcastle, who very slow start to the year, really was having trouble playing time. Month of June, though, hitting 263 with 14 home runs, 13 doubles, and he even threw in three stolen bases. So it seemed like every time he put the ball in play, it was for extra bases. He was crushing the baseball. What's your take on Ryan Mountcastle?
I think he's one of those guys that is probably not going anywhere. I mean, the people that drafted him are ecstatic with what he's doing, and they're holding on to him. The people that didn't draft him may think that he's still playing a little bit beyond, but you know, he's a young guy and may continue to develop, but they're probably of the mindset he might have to face some adjustments in the second half of the season. So I think he's one of those guys that I've enjoyed watching, but I don't think I'm going to spend a lot of time digging in to what I think he's going to do in the second half, because he's not available in leagues, and I don't think he's going to be on the move in leagues.
Yeah, he's a tricky one. He's really tricky, and the projection sites, again, kind of like Scope, they see a similar second half, and that leaves it tough to be like, oh, I'm going to trade this guy, because if he can produce that similar second half, that's outstanding, obviously. And we all know that Baltimore, that Camden Yards, is very, very live as it gets warm, so that's a great ballpark to hit in. So you got that going for him. A lot of the AL East outside of Tropicana is a great ballpark to hit in. So, he's a tough one to bounce away from. I like the talents. I was shocked to see him hit for this average and then to see the projection site still like this average going forward. It tells me quite a bit that maybe we're seeing something legit. So like the Bat X, I love how it incorporates the Savant stuff, the StatCast stuff, and it kind of gives you a total feel. So I like that a lot. All right. This one, baffled. Absolutely baffled by what's taking place here, because Gary Sanchez, in recent years, I've taken the chances. I have, especially when he fell in drafts, like last year especially, he fell. And I'm like, okay, SP, our catcher too, let's go. Let's do it. Didn't work out so well, obviously. Well, it started out really bad this year as well, and I was like doing the happy dance. Like, I wasn't doing victory laps, but I was prepared to do victory laps. And let's just say the month of June really put that victory lap away, because he's hitting 289 with 8 home runs, only striking out 26.5% of the time, which for him, very good. But man, I can't believe he's going to keep doing this. What do you got on Gary Sanchez?
Well, I was offered actually something of a little bit of value for him in a dynasty league in the offseason, and I turned it down. And what I told the guy, either I'm going to reap the benefits or you're going to be able to pick him up off of the waiver wire, which is what happened. I dropped him when he started out so slow and was getting benched for games. And now, sure enough, this happens. Yep. So I don't know. He's been streaky throughout his career. There's been a lot of tweets out there this week on that, about how the month by month of each season of his career, how streaky he's been. A lot of talk out there. I think a lot of it, I can see him continuing not quite to the June pace, but I can see him having a good second half because I think he's more comfortable behind the plate. I think that led to a lot of his struggles. I think it was still leading to his struggles early this season. I think he just feels more comfortable defensively, which allows him to, you know, play baseball. And so he won't be this good the rest of the season, but he could be the 30-plus home run Gary Sanchez that we expected when you said you were still taking a chance on him. He could be that for the second half.
No, I think it's a great point you made about his defense. There's a lot to be said. We say it about other positions. Like, this guy's not comfortable. He's in a new position. Like I said, Adolino Suarez trying to play shortstop. They put him back to third base, and he started hitting again. Like, he doesn't never going to hit for high average, but he got comfortable again. Just little things like that. We say it time and time again. Goes a long way. And Gary's defense was atrocious. Still not great, but it is better. When you need to throw on top, you got that New York media just shoving it down your throat of how bad you are time and time again. Does not help the cause at all. So and there was rumors he's going to get traded this year. It was that bad. Those rumors have gone away. So that has quietly gone away. But we'll see. Maybe people are saying the Yankees might be sellers. That's going to be hilarious. I never thought I'd ever see that day in my lifetime. I still don't think I'm going to see that day in my lifetime. But, yeah, the power is legit. We always knew that. If he can sit for a decent average like he is, that's big. And lowering that K rate is going to help a ton. So I think I think the biggest part, like you said, though, is the comfortable. Being comfortable behind the dish going a long ways to help him out. And if they can just stay healthy and keep those bombers around him, that'll obviously help quite a bit too. All right, let's talk about a few pitchers here. Luis Garcia, he obviously didn't have a great night on Wednesday night. A lot of it was not his fault for those that watched the scatter plots. The umpire, robot umpires looks pretty positive these days because, my goodness, I wasn't watching the game live. I just had my app up and I was doing some other things, and I saw a walk to start the game and then pitching coach ejected. And I'm like, oh, that means the strike zone's bad. Like, if the pitching coach is tossed right away. So then in a chat that I run, I got this guy's finding stuff and like, oh yeah, no, it was bad. He should have two straight strikeouts, blah, blah, blah. So it was bad. Before that, though, he's been very, very good. He's had a very good month of June, 3.15 ERA, 2.4 FIP, 3.99 XFIP. The strikeouts have been there. He keeps the ball in the ballpark, only one home run all month, which I think is very, very nice. So what's your takes on Luis Garcia going forward?
Yeah, that's what I had written down. I had one home run and exclamation point. And then, and even extremely small sample for a stat like FIP, but last night's performance, a 2.91 FIP. So, like you said, been very good leading up to that. And last night, not as bad as it may appear on the surface. My concern is he's at over 80 innings pitched, and he's never hit 110 in his professional career. That was in 2019. That's my concern. I don't know how far they're going to let him go. And I have that concern with a lot of pitchers, more than usual due to last season, but especially the younger guys that we have no idea what they did in 2020. And then also the next guy that we're going to talk about, guys that have a history of that type of thing.
No, that's a great point with Garcia and many, many more, especially on the Astros by themselves. You got Garcia, you got McCullers coming off, TJ. Framber, I don't think to worry about because he missed most of the start of the season. But, they have a long list. Long, long list. Javier is in the bullpen now. Maybe him and Garcia switch spots. I don't know. I guess it's lucky they have the options they have. At the same time, they need these guys for the postseason. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage that, and that's always a headache for fantasy owners. I guess you enjoy him while he goes out there for maybe another month strong, and then we kind of see how they play with him, get him to 100 innings and see what happens. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think he's darn legit. There's no questioning that. So with those innings concerned for, like, say, a lot of these guys, and obviously it's different player by player, league by league, would you be trying to trade a guy like this?
I think so. I think I'm operating under the Brewers came right out and said that their number was 100 more than last year. I kind of think that's probably about what most teams have in mind. So that's kind of what I would be looking at. And guys that are approaching that, especially teams that are in contention and they're going to be needed in the stretch run in the postseason, we're probably going to see a lot of teams being the Dodgers. We're going to start seeing starts skipped with phantom IL stints. I think we're going to start seeing this with a lot of guys.
No, you're 100% correct. Like, if it's not injuries, it's going to be something else that's just going to keep making us scratch our heads like, oh, man. So I'm with you, though. I think if you can get something for some of these guys while they're still pitching this way, why they haven't said they're going to shut them down yet, I would go for it. I also do agree. I think every guy is going to get minimum 50-plus innings, potentially 100, because you've listened to certain guys, and people know I work out of my truck, so I listen to podcasts all day long. I don't listen to just fantasy podcasts. I listen to a lot of baseball. Like, I love the Chris Rose Experience because he has real baseball players on there, and they all talk about things. They don't hold back. Those guys and some other shows, they have all said between getting ready for the COVID season, and then even postseason, because they knew they'd have to get ready for 2021, they all threw an extra combined like 60-plus innings through that kind of, just to keep themselves ready. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's, like you said, something we don't know. And that's one of the biggest headaches, even going into this year, all the stuff we did not know. But I think we're going to be surprised where some of these guys are like, oh, there's no way they're getting 100 innings. They go get 180 and they're fine. Like, it's just going to be the way it works. So it's a guessing game. That's the beauty of it. But that's what we do. Yes, you mentioned this next guy, and he is a headache to me. I've usually avoided Sean Manaea like the plague. He's starting to prove me wrong, though. And it came with a big, big month of June. 1.13 ERA, 2.3 FIP, 3.6 XFIP. Only walked 10, which is pretty good to me. Struck out 34 and 32 innings pitched. And he had a decent outing on Wednesday or Thursday as well, as we recorded. The A's are still playing, but he threw decent. He gave up a bomb to Gallo, but who hasn't these days? So, yeah. What do you have on Manaea? He's a guy I can't get confident with.
Yeah, same way. For different reasons than Garcia, he's already at over 92 innings pitched, and 54 last season, shortened season, of course, 29 and two-thirds in 2019. His career high in 2018, 160 innings. So he's less than 68 innings away from his career high in innings. That's very concerning. Now, his has been due to injury. I'm not expecting anyone specifically to get injured, but we know injury is a possibility for everyone. I just don't know if we have never seen him handle more than 68 more innings the rest of the season. Love the ballpark he's in. I really have question marks. I think he's another guy. If I have him, I'm riding it out as long as I can. But if I don't, I'm not trying to overpay for him at all.
Yeah, Manaea is one I am not paying for. If I did roster him, like you said, I'd be riding it out till the wheels fell off, and then I'd be the first sign of concern, he'd be back on my bench. Like, just beware. We've seen the blow-ups happen with him. We've seen him pitch very good before. He was a prospect that was supposed to be this good. So, like, we shouldn't be 100% surprised by this. Like you said, you have much more logic behind it than I do. I just have, like, the problem with fantasy owners, as much as we say don't do it, there's always that little voice in the back of your head going, this guy burned me so many times, I just can't do it. I did see the car crash over and over, Sean Manaea. And you're right, though, in the innings part. That's a much better reason to be concerned with him, because he's looked darn good right now. Mine was always the velocity. He seemed like, but the velocity's up right now. So as long as that keeps going, that's huge. Going into the year, I didn't trust at all. I thought he was going to throw batting practice. So we'll see how that keeps going. The A's need him for the playoffs. They need a number two to go with Bassett. So they might baby him as well, as you were saying with Luis Garcia. This one, Luis Castillo, my boy, drafted him in a lot of places. Been a rough year, but June has been great. June has been wonderful. 6-plus innings in 4 or 5 starts. 1.71 ERA, 3.3 XFIP, 32 Ks. The walks are still there. That's Luis Castillo for you. But he's limited the damage in a big, big way. Now, by the time you guys hear this, the Padres might have played him for 9 runs and 2 innings. We don't know yet. But he's been very, very good. Are you buying back into Luis Castillo the rest of the way?
I am. And it's, like you said, the walks are always there. That's why he's never had a really outstanding K-minus walk rate other than the shortened 2020. His career is 17.5%. June was 16%. And he's progressively worked right back up towards that career rate. The 2019 that got us excited about him, it was 18.8. the season. He had 226 strikeouts. Yeah, I think we see the Luis Castillo we drafted in March the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to keep running him out there and crossing my fingers. But I believe we're going to see him. The velocity's back up. There's all those reports early on. He doesn't like the cold weather early. Things are warming up, and he's pitching great. So I believe there's something. I don't like doing stuff when it's freezing cold. So I get it, especially if you have to. Imagine trying to throw like 95 and your muscles aren't completely loose. Like, that can't be fun. So, yeah, I'm with you. Give me some second half Luis Castillo. Couple more to break down for you. Adam Wainwright, the ancient one that just every year you wonder if he's going to play another year. Then he does, and he still pitches great. Like, the dude's getting it done. He's like a modern-day Maddox, it feels like, right now. The month of June was great. Six innings in every – he had a quality start in every outing. He was outstanding. Six or more Ks in his last four outings. 35 Ks in the month of June. 2.45 ERA. XFIP of 3. Not a whole lot more you could ask from Adam Wainwright. Now he gets Colorado and Coors on Wednesday night – or Thursday night as we're recording. You think it's Wednesday. This is a messy week. What's your thoughts on Waino going forward, though? Is this a guy you try to deal while he's at his peak?
No, I'm riding him. This is the kind of guy that I am – anybody can get injured, but this is the kind of guy that I am most comfortable with giving me my innings the rest of the season. And, like, Eno Saris and others have told us over the years, best in-season predictor, K-minus walk rate, and he's at 21-4 in the month of June. I'm riding guys like Adam Wainwright and the Knicks guy the rest of the season as much as I can. These are the guys I try to go after with my Luis Garcia. Like, we thought we'd try to move them. These are the guys I'm going after.
That's smart. And the other thing with Waino, that, like, you mentioned the innings eating part, and the next guy definitely does as well. But, you know, we talk about Kyle Hendricks in the draft season all the time. This is Kyle Hendricks, but like 200 picks later. Like, yeah. I know you expect Hendricks to be better, and you're still waiting because Waino's old. You're just waiting for it to kind of stop. But in reality, if you took a step back and you're going, okay, I can wait 200 picks and potentially get the same thing. We do that with rookies all the time. Why aren't we doing it with a veteran like Wainwright? Like, why not? Sometimes you look back on, like, hindsight's always a fun thing, but you think back going, why was I not as aggressive on this like I should have been? If he had a bad year, we wouldn't be having this conversation, but he does it every year. So, like, why are we doing this? But the other guy you mentioned is Charlie Morton, and he's a guy that I avoided in draft seasons also. More so, I thought his price tag was a little too high for my liking. Going to Atlanta, we've seen injuries in the past, but when he's healthy, he's a workhorse, just like you mentioned. And he's a, you know, five or more innings and four or five starts this month. He's been great. The strikeouts have been there, 2.73 ERA. He's been everything the Braves asked for and have needed. Like we mentioned with Fried earlier, they've needed starting pitchers to give that bullpen some rest, and Morton has been that guy. You said you're in on him for the second half of the season, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, K-minus walk rate, 20.7 in the month of June, right up there where we love to see that. Another guy that only gave up one home run in the month, and what's interesting to me is even during his slow start, he hasn't given up more than one home run in any outing this entire season. So that's another thing I really like about him. And I just like these veterans in the second half. Even if they were using sticky stuff, there was a time they didn't. So they know how to adjust. They probably are the guys that were doing whatever was – I don't know what the best program was pre-COVID, COVID, post-COVID, but these guys have a better idea than the younger guys did, in my mind. I could be completely wrong about that, but they're the guys I'm comfortable with.
I 100% agree with you. I think especially the point on the pre-sticky stuff, like, there's always been stuff out there. Like, we can't ignore that. But these guys know how to do it with the minimal stuff, is a way to say it. Like, with the, or they just know how to hide it better, one of the two. So, exactly. So yeah, there's something that, you know, with age comes wisdom. So there's something to be said there with Morton and Waino and some of these other guys that it'll be – interesting to see how it keeps going. I'm hoping for Morton. If you had to pick between the two, would you rather have Wainwright or Morton going forward?
I think I'll get more innings out of Wainwright. Morton's a five inning guy, and as bad as their bullpen has been late in games, that can cost you a couple of wins here and there. So I think it's close, but I'd go Wainwright.
Yeah, I'm going Wainwright too. It's close, but yeah, I'll go Wainwright because there's still something about Charlie with the fact when he's off, he walks a ton of guys, and it just shrinks that outing, like, in a big way. So the strikeouts will be there pretty much every start, but the duration of the outing for the potential wins, like you mentioned, that can get dicey from times with him. So, yeah, I'll go Waino as well. All right, let's talk a little waiver wire action here. We'll kind of go quick hitters on this one. We started doing this last week. I'm going to try to do it every Thursday show, just to kind of give a heads up into the weekend. Obviously, if you want a better, more in-depth Fab show, go listen to Kevin's show over the weekend on the wire with at Pitcher List, and they'll give you a whole rundown of all the good stuff plus his article. But just looking ahead, a lot can change before Sunday's biddings. What are a couple players that you have circled that you're going to look to make some bids on this week?
It's really hard to carry a third catcher on teams, but Kirk and Nola are both nearing return and both fairly widely available. Kirk is 46% rostered in TGFBI. Nola 68%, a little higher. Kirk is actually reported to AAA, so we may, and he's eligible to return today from a 60-day IL. So we could possibly get some news before Sunday, which would hurt us as far as Fab price goes. I think hopefully we don't hear much, and this is the last inexpensive week to grab him. But Nola, there hasn't been much new news in a week or two, so he would be my consolation bid. But it's hard to grab a third catcher. But if you have a spot, there are a couple of good ones out there.
It is. And Kirk's, they're both good. Like you said, Kirk was just heating up before he got hurt, too. So that'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see how Toronto goes with it because McGuire's actually been hitting. I don't believe he'll continue to hit, but he's been hitting. And even, was it Adams? Adams will go back down, but he's been playing decent, too. So I like the Kirk call there. I just had a couple outfielders. And this is pretty much deep leagues, but like Michael Taylor's hitting again. We've seen him be streaky, so he's an intriguing one. But the main one I had circled was Guillermo Heredia, still available in a lot of leagues. He's hitting like six for the Braves right now. That offense, once it gets clicking, like we saw the other night, it's been a slow start to the year. But once he that offense gets clicking, he's going to reap the benefits. He's hitting for average. He's got some pop. I like Heredia in your deeper leagues because outfield is just a wasteland to find some options for. Any other options you're seeing in the waiver wire that stand out to you?
Yeah, one I really like, unfortunately, because I'm picking on my Royals, but Cal Quantrill gets two starts at Tampa and then versus Kansas City. I like that. A long shot. This is deep, deep leagues. He just gave up four earned runs in three innings pitched for the second consecutive outing. But Riley Smith gets Colorado. First game on the road after a long homestand. That's my favorite matchup in baseball. He might be able to stretch out a couple more innings there, and that would be a really deep league. If I'm using a middle reliever, I could use him and hopefully get a few more innings than what I'd get out of my middle reliever that start.
I like the Quantrill call. I had him written down in the two starts here, and I was thinking his overall numbers don't like just – discussed how good he actually is. So I'm looking forward to seeing more. You mentioned the matchups there. And unfortunately, like you said, your Royals, they're in some kind of funk right now. It's rough. It sucks. But we'll see how that goes. Logan Allen's also getting a two-step. He's coming back. But I think I'd rather have the Quantrill side. Couple of pitchers I had circled. Colby Allard, he's been an up-and-down roller coaster this year. But he threw very well last night in Oakland. He gets two starts next week, Detroit and Oakland, both at home. So that's always a nice one to check the boxes on. And then Zach Davies is actually pitching pretty good. Not sure how many leagues he's available in, probably more 12 teams than 15 league teams. He's got Philly and St. Louis at home next week, so he can be an interesting two-stepper for you as well. Any other Fab talk before we get some listener questions?
I'm surprised how many leagues Garrett Cooper is available because we knew he'd be back this week, and he's coming right out of the gate, 7-for-13 with a home run already. So I was a little shocked that at least in TGFBI, he's available in 29% of leagues.
No, I love the Garrett Cooper call. Big, big Garrett Cooper fan here. So don't have to twist my arm too much on that one. All right, couple listener questions for you, and we will rock on out of here. Joe G, he asks, will Bryce Harper ever hit another home run with a runner on base again?
It's – Obviously, the answer is yes, but we know where this question is coming from. It's been rough. They seem to all be solo shots, and the injuries at the top of the lineup with Segura and others, and he wasn't always hitting at the top, but McCutcheon is heating up. So hopefully it's more than just a yes. Hopefully that becomes the norm.
Yeah, I think he will. Two home runs on Wednesday. That offense has been such an up and down thing, but I think they're getting healthy. Rhys Hoskins had a horrible June, but the peripheral stats still show he's very, very good. So as that team keeps going, and Price has to stay healthy. He's been hurt a lot too. So it's not all the Phillies offense around him. But yeah, I'd be confident he'll get his by season's end. I would not worry too much about that. Other listener question we had here, Taylor Johnson at astat32 asks, as a Chapman owner, talking about Aroldis Chapman, who has been ugly of late, he's a Chapman owner with starting pitcher needs. Would you hold tight and think he finishes the year as a top five closer, or would you look to move on? What would be the SP tier you would look for in return? I think this is a great question here. So what's your thoughts on this one?
It is a great question. And about 3 weeks ago, in the leagues that I have Chapman, I've held him, but I did go pick up. Why am I drawing a blank? Zach, he just came back.
For which team?
For the Yankees.
Zach Britton.
Zach Britton. Thank you. I can't believe I forgot Zach Britton's name.
No worries.
Yeah, I picked up Zach Britton in the leagues that I have Chapman, just because there's some worry that I see there. I don't know if I can get enough for him in trade. The tier I would want, people aren't giving up those starters, I don't think. I think I want a solid SP2, and I don't think I can get that for Chapman right now.
Yeah, that's kind of my problem. When he asked this question, I didn't realize it was a listener question, so I started typing it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to erase that, save it for the show. I'm torn on Chapman because he's looked really bad, like really bad. He looks like someone that the sticky stuff's kind of missing. You know, those high velocity guys, now the controls everywhere. If I'm a hitter, I'm terrified. Like, give him some rosin, please. Like, give him something, because he's throwing 100 something miles an hour. Like, for the goodness sake. But I am concerned. Do I think he's going to be a top five closer? As messy as the closer landscape is, I wouldn't be surprised. I want to say yes. Like, I want to say he figures it out. At worst, he's top 10, which is still very good the rest of the season. I think you got that going your way. And for that reason, like you mentioned, SP2. I'm horrible at trades. I'll admit that now. Like, I try to make them as easy as possible, but I think, like most people do, you overvalue your players going into a trade. So, like, in my head, I'm thinking I would throw it out there and see if a team's really desperate for saves, go trade him for, I was thinking, a top 10 to 15 starting pitcher. Like, I might be overshooting the moon there, but you can always come back.
That's the only way I think I would go through with it, yeah.
Yeah, you could say, okay, give me a top 10 or 15 guy, and then you could work back, like maybe make a deal, or say, sorry, it's not going to work. Because at worst, you still have a very, very good closer on a team that's going to win a bunch of baseball games. He's going to get, unless something's really broken, he's going to still get a ton of chances. They're not taking him out of the role. They might split it a bit with Britton or give some other guys, some like Chad Green or something, some slot. He's still going to be the closer, though, like in the grand scheme of things. So you can't just give him up. Let's have some fun with it here. Would you trade Chapman for Luis Castillo?
Absolutely, I would.
Okay. Let's see where the line ends here. Chapman for Lance Lynn.
That's really close. We found our line. I don't think I would. Exactly.
Yeah, see, Lynn's he's an innings eater. Gets you strikeouts. Good ball to the club. But is he good enough? It's a tough question right there. Like, yeah. Is he good enough? So, he's a guy like younger than Wainwright, but I'm not concerned about Lynn unless his arm falls off. He's throwing every fifth day, and he's going to throw 100 and some pitches. So
that's it depends on what else I have. He said he really needs starting pitching.
Exactly. So and maybe Lynn
is works. One of the guys, like when we were talking about Wainwright and Morton, only a higher tier, but veteran that I think I'd be comfortable with. So I may have just talked myself into it.
Yeah, let's have some fun here. I'm gonna pick some. Now that never does it properly. Give me 2 seconds here. We're gonna have some fun with this one. I'm gonna pull up some more pitchers here. I was looking at that's the one thing in FPC they don't have like a ranking system, so you can't like just do top whatever. That one always kind of bugs me. But we'll just do pitchers here. Like obviously you're not doing DeGrom. What about Trevor Rogers?
For the same reason that I just said I'm changing my mind on Lance Lynn, I think then my answer becomes yes with Trevor Rogers.
Yeah, the only thing with Rogers, I wonder how many innings you let him go, but yes, I'm with you there. Let's have some more fun here. What about taking a chance and trading for an injured Shane Bieber knowing he's coming back in a couple weeks?
No, I'm not trading him for an injured guy.
Okay. What about Chris Bassitt? Maybe that's like Lance Lynn light.
Yeah. It really depends on – he said he really needs starting pitching. Yeah. I'm a huge Chris Bassitt guy.
Me too.
Drafted a lot of him. So I might. If I have other closing – it sounds like he can afford to let him go as well, right? Yep. Otherwise, yep. He's not even asking this question. Exactly. He's probably got exactly. other options. So if that's the case and it's dire need for starting pitching and I have a chance to climb in the rankings, Chris Bassitt's a possibility.
I'm with you there. I'll throw another couple out here. I think I'll know the answers here, but it's kind of all tongue-in-cheek. What about Kyle Gibson?
What he's done so far says we should, but I couldn't pull the trigger.
That's why I had to throw him out there because it's just ridiculous what he's been doing. You know, the rest of them, like what about a guy that's also kind of going in the wrong direction? If you look at spin rates and everything, what about Lucas Giolito?
I think I would.
Because if he figures it out, he's like a top 10 pitcher.
Yeah, I think I'd take the chance.
But you might be able to sell the point, like the guy, hey, look at the decline in this and that and the other, so you can sneak in a top end guy potentially. So there's your angle, buddy. There's your angle. Go check that out. We could have done this all day. Like I was just scrolling through. We could have done all kinds of names. I think you could use angles and try to see where you can go. But Gio's scaring people right now. So you might be able to find something there. I think a lot of these guys at one point in their lives were very good pitchers without sticky stuff. At one point. Yes. I think it's just more the transition of going cold turkey. Now they're trying to figure it out again. And that's what a lot of them are angry about. It's like, hey, like we could have done this in the offseason and figured it out again, but you're telling us to do this right now without trying to injure ourselves. It's going to be a problem.
And we don't know when guys stopped because Monday was the official day, but it had been going on for a while. Guys might have started. They might have started trying to use a little less or a little something a different, a little less sticky. And my worry with Chapman 3 weeks ago was over two or three outings, his velocity was dropping. Yep. My worry wasn't sticky stuff. My worry was injury. But now the velocity's back, but he doesn't have the control. So maybe it was sticky stuff, and maybe he's putting it all back together.
Yeah, so we'll see. That's the fun. Like, fantasy baseball is already a guessing game, and now we have a million other things. We have no clue what's going on out there. It's just tons and tons of fun. But you know it was tons and tons of fun, Kevin, was having you on the show today. So I really appreciate it. And go ahead and plug your stuff one more time. Let everybody know where they can find you.
No, I appreciate it, Bubba. It was awesome being here. Over at Pitcher List, I co-host On the Wire with Adam Howe. We do record late Saturday night so we can be up to date as possible when it drops on Sunday morning. And then I get as much done ahead of time as I can, but I wait till Sunday morning to finish up my fab article for the week that drops Sunday afternoon as well at pitcherlist.com.
I love it. Go check it out, everybody. As someone that does a waiver wire article, they're so much fun. So much fun. But I give you credit because you cover more than one position. I just do one position. I bang my head against the wall. So I give you tons of credit on that one. But everybody, again, go check him out on Twitter at HastingKevin. Smart, smart guy. Really, really nice guy. Great having you on the show. And I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Thanks a lot, Bubba. We'll see you again soon.
No problem, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 383 with Kevin Hastings talking some fantasy baseball. Catch y'all later.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.